So tonight, I like to explore the theme of contentment. Contentment. Is there a Finnish word that exactly translates that? I don't know. It's, yeah. How does it sound?
Tyytyväisyys.
Thank you. Yes. Was that a disagreement? What was that? Alternative translations? Argument about what it means?
Tyytyväinen on hyvä tästä, riittäväinen. Voisi olla toi riittäväinen, to have enough of something.
Yeah, enough. It's definitely an important part. Okay. Be careful what you ask for. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, these qualities is important qualities. It often actually are groups of qualities, actually, aren't they? You know, and maybe contentment is one of those, actually has slight different meanings depending on sort of how you're understanding it or kind of what you're bringing out. So perhaps as part of this talk, you know, as you're listening, you can just sort of keep in touch with that really as a reflection for yourself. You know, what is true contentment? You know, what is kind of contentment that is really available and maybe reliable even? So the kind of contentment that is kind of, I guess, pointed to in our practice here and in the Buddhist teachings is maybe a bit different from how that can be, you know, understood in our life in the world. It's like, you know, just had a really good meal, you know, my favorite things, and I feel really content. You know, that sort of, or, you know, that sort of situation where you just, you know, I'm in my favourite armchair and I just feel really, with my favourite cup of tea. You know, that's sort of the contentment that's, you know, it's lovely. There's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But it's like the Buddha is maybe pointing us towards a different kind of contentment. I feel that that's been around today, isn't it, somehow in our practice and in what's been talked about, touched on already, of the possibility of a kind of very maybe radically different kind of okayness, or yeah, enough, or acceptance, a kind of resting, a kind of okay, this is life. All right. This, which actually, you know, isn't dependent on things being how we want them to be, you know, or having what we want, you know, or having got rid of what we don't want. And beginning to see those movements of mind, isn't it? Sort of as you begin to kind of come into this stillness and steadiness, and you begin to see the possibility of a kind of a, you know, a resting place of presence, of clarity, of kindness. Maybe it has, again, this different flavors that actually can really abide and be okay kind of with, different things, pain, pleasure, sadness, happiness. So interesting. So, that can even find a sense of contentment sort of with agitated mind, the sort of presence of sort of worrying thoughts, but somehow there's some part of you where you're just like, okay, there it goes, blah, 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 I'm all right. And it's like we're kind of developing, cultivating a sense of being able to know that place of oh, it's okay, can be with this, can open to this. And sometimes I can feel like it's like it can almost be like the treasure under the doorstep, of your front door. You step out into the world and you're wandering around, looking for happiness and looking for what's going to make you content. And actually, it's right there. And you kind of step over it. We step over it, don't we? I see myself doing that all the time with different things. But just earlier, it was funny, I was thinking a little moment of contentment. I was decided to have my tea quietly, and I was listening to the managers and Paul chatting away in the little dining area, and it was very nice, happy conversation. Sorry if you feel jealous. Silence is lovely too. We all win, right? And I was sort of feeling, listening, going, and it was like I was content to not be there, and I was content to be where I was, and I could sort of feel like, sometimes in that kind of situation, you thought, well, I wish I was, oh, they're having such a nice time, and you're kind of, leaning that way, or you feel like, oh, I wish, and it was really lovely, it was kind of, oh, this is really okay, the sort of content, And it sort of, for me, it was a really clear moment of how contentment is not really dependent on the circumstance so much as what your mind is doing with it. I see that again and again, the difference between, say, you're stuck on an aeroplane, and you're sitting next to somebody who, find unpleasant for some reason, think, oh my, how many hours have I got, and that kind of, how can I, can I get away, can I find a seat, all this different stuff. And at some point where you just say, oh, it's all right, actually, I can be with this. And then it's amazing, it can be like a completely different experience, not that you necessarily, love, whatever, but again, contentment. Anyway, probably you can think of lots of examples of yourself where, just another example I've noticed for myself. I love islands, islands in the sea. There's lots of them around here, I know. there's quite a lot around England and the British Isles. And I have this thing, I love going to islands, And I've got this sort of list of islands I want to go to. It's quite long. And I was a friend's house, I was looking at this book of the Scottish islands, and I was like, some part of me was just going, I want to go there, and I want to go that one. Well, first should I go that? And it's like I really could see this whole thing going, and it's fine, and maybe I'll go. Maybe it'll be lovely. Maybe it won't. Maybe it would just rain all the time and be horrible. But I could just see, that my experience of just being at my friend's house was sort of being taken over by this sort of lather, sort of frothing at the mouth. This is where I want to be, That's where I really want to go, and it has so much meaning for me, and I've had so many amazing experiences on islands. So there's a lot of conditioning, because actually it often has been really wonderful. So they got their flashing lights, they pulsate, it's like, oh. And you have things probably like that in your life, What is it for you? Gadgets, You can't walk past the shop, like that. And then what is it, the new iPhone number 4 comes out and it goes, it's, You know, what is it for you that has that sort of glow? You know, it calls to you. It's so, you know, wow. And it's so interesting to sort of, when you can see that it's really okay not to have that. You know, this afternoon, even I was thinking, oh, it'd be so nice to go for a walk, such a lovely day, and I was like, feeling very tired. And I was actually, no, I think best thing for me to do is lie down. So it's a little bit like, I can't go outside. Oh, well. And I lay down and again, maybe it's partly this is about appreciating what's present, you know, which Paul was pointing to. It's like, again, what we overlook, that's right here. What's so lovely right here in this room right now? Can you feel us so much? It's so lovely. Ooh, to appreciate this right here. And that is such a practice, again, because of our conditioning. You know, we keep overlooking, you know, looking over, you know, past. Because what's right here somehow is not good enough. You know, I mean, they're full of that, aren't we? About ourselves as well. About the people we're close to. Oh my goodness. You know, the closer you get to people, the more you know about them and the more you see how they're, oh God. You know, you see, don't you? And then you think, oh dear, I'll have another one. I don't want this friend, this father, this mother, this child, this partner. Goodness me, what was I thinking? I only got born into this family, for goodness sake. What a choice. Because we're so conditioned to be dissatisfied, isn't it? Discontentment, dissatisfaction. We're very close to dukkha, this wonderful word, which is really this sense of it's just that things are never quite right. You know, it's always something could be slightly better, you know, even when you feel really good, right? Or you wish it could last a bit longer, or you think, well, it's going to end, you know, probably. And how difficult it is just to appreciate, appreciate what we have. Anyway, so back to my little example of this afternoon, I ended up looking at the most beautiful reflection, kind of shadow, you know, the sun shining through the trees and the way the shadow was falling on the what do you call this, china, sort of ceramic, like a chimney sort of thing where you put fire in. And it was making this shimmering kind of, you know, effect on the ceramic. And it was so beautiful. I was just so sort of touched by that I could just lie there and just sort of see this beauty, you know, right there. And I didn't necessarily need to go for a walk to enjoy the sunshine. And actually, in a sense, maybe my appreciation was sharpened because it was just that. And I was just there. And I was open. I was open to it and I was still enough to receive that. So maybe sometimes it's quite hard to find that, because we're very, very caught up in discontent. You know, in a sense, there is a lot to be discontented about in the world. So this isn't about passivity or indifference. It isn't about saying, oh well, I give up, resignation. It's not about that. It can maybe kind of, we can go into that, or indulgence, where it just becomes a comfort orientation. So, you know, because everything has a sort of shadow side, doesn't it? We have to watch. You know, maybe you're quite a contented type of person, generally. I'm not. I mean, you know, there you go. It's a kind of identity thing. You know, I've always been discontented, and that's who I am. And, you know, I can't be a contented person. And so for me, taking up a theme like this is really wonderful, because it begins to sort of open up to actually, you know, there is contentment, there can be, you know, and that can be something that I can open to. But yeah, that for any of us, perhaps it can tip over into something unskillful. So I think being very, very patient and forgiving and compassionate with our discontentedness, and humorous maybe as well, is crucial, because it's going to be around probably for most of us for a long time, one shape or another, isn't it? So, you know, if we almost like becoming content to be a muddle, you know, or content to be imperfect, you know, it's like we're all so hooked in, aren't we? I think many of us are, and trying to improve ourselves. How many of us here sometimes, you know, it's like actually we want to be someone else, or we want to be better, or maybe there's a real investment in actually very positive self-image, and we jolly well want to bolster that up and make it look good and shine and make sure that everybody sees that. You know, I don't know what your thing is. You know, for me, it's probably more, has been, you know, that sense of sort of not being good enough, or being wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. You sit wrong, you walk wrong, you meditate wrong. Basically, you're wrong, so, you know, make yourself different. Doesn't work. And so that the importance of being able to, as we've been practicing here, sort of open to the lumpy bits, the bumpy bits, the painful parts of our body and mind, and realize that actually the real transformation and the real kind of happiness or contentment is actually available through our changing our relationship with that. But miraculously, as we change our relationship with it, that also changes. And that things that used to be huge problems because we were so embattled with them just kind of fade. You know, if I think about my relationship with my father, you know, like many of us, difficult relationships with parents, perhaps for different reasons. And I can really see how, as my level of maybe compassion or understanding or forgiveness, or you know, just saying, okay, that's just how it is and how it's been and so on, that he appears to be much nicer, you know. Well, the relationship is much more okay. You know, and I can. There's more room for the love and the enjoyment. So, yeah, we have to work with our discontent. I have loads of wonderful quotes I want to read you. I feel like there's so many different sort of maybe ways into connecting with this. So I want to share some of these other voices with you. So hopefully, you know, different voices will resonate in different ways. This is something I love that was said by a great, great Sri Lankan teacher called Ajahn Buddhadasa. He said, just let yourself rest in what is already here. What is not here is not worth pursuing. So I'll read that again. So a lot packed into a very small space there. Just let yourself rest in what is already here. What is not here is not worth pursuing. So I wanted to maybe mention a few different ways that we might understand, we might practice with this. Different ways that we might connect with a sense of contentment or cultivate that. Because, yeah, it's not just one way. And one way, I think, which is really helpful, is the whole area of gratitude and appreciation and remembering something good, something lovely. Like right now, I could just invite you to sort of, and this is so helpful, especially when you feel down. You can actually remember something lovely, a friend or a lovely moment or just something good that happened, or, you know, a place that you love, anything like that. And you bring it to mind, and oh, it can help you. It can help to sort of help shift the moment, shift you to remembering to then tuning into that that's sort of available in our, you know, in our presence, sort of every moment. It's like talking to someone earlier, like changing the channels on a TV set. Isn't it? Sometimes you had this experience. Happened to me once, similar to what someone was describing today. You know, that you're really upset. I remember being really upset once and went for a walk with a friend and saw one of my favourite beings in the whole world, which is a dog called Polly. And I just see her, my heart lights up, and it's like, I just love her so much. And it was like, Polly! And I was like, happy, and went and had a little chat with Polly, the dog. And then went on with my friend, you know, and kind of feeling horrible again. And but not as horrible. And she pointed out to me what had happened. So did you see what happened there? It was like changing the channels on a TV set. You know, it's like sometimes we think we've got years of therapy to do to get over certain things or get out of certain patterns. And boom. What does that show? What does that show us? And again, it's this sort of, But we can learn to actually sort of do that, sort of intentionally practice that if Polly is not available. I can, she's busy, she's off for a walk. I can think about her, it makes me smile. It's crazy, isn't it? But there you go, just whatever works. A teacher called Sharda, an American teacher called Sharda, said, by recognizing times of deep contentment in ourselves, we plant a cellular memory of happiness that allows us to more easily find a natural resting place for the mind. So it's like as we experience the happiness and recollect it, it kind of enlarges that bit of our brain. I think there's some neuroscience here, I'm no expert on that, but in Rick Hansen's book, Buddha's Brain, there's some really good stuff there about the power of taking in the good, you know, and of actually, you know, consciously remembering and recollecting sort of happy moments, and how incredibly that, and it does build a kind of a place in us. And for those of us of a more discontented or, you know, upset disposition, let's say, this is incredibly important, because, you know, there's this sense that actually really can shift our sense of a home base. And I can feel it myself over a period of 20 years. You know, I'm a slow learner, so, but, you know, it is shifting. It can shift, but it takes a lot of patience and these sort of, you know, continued practice. But maybe also, let's see. What brings you contentment? And I mean, you don't have to answer that right now, but maybe that's something to take with you. You know, what the question's like, what do I really need right now? You know, really, to be content. So it's so interesting, is it? I don't know for you, if you, because you've got, in theory, you've got this whole list of things. Well, you know, don't get me started. You know, there's this and that and the other thing and that. But really, 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 you know, this moment, what do I really need in order to be happy, to feel okay? It's like you begin to realize it's something like, I just have to be willing to be here, actually, something more like that, you know, and it's something about unhooking from the stories that we're believing about ourselves, you know, or the situation that we're in. Not always easy, of course. I did want to mention, I thought I should mention something the Buddha said about this, at least. The four great contentments, which again point to the kind, this kind of radical sort of non-dependent nature of what's possible, he says it is food, clothing, shelter, and being content with what you have, or if you have none. Right. Okay. Now, obviously, he was talking in this case to the renunciates, you know, the monks and nuns who were alms, and so it was an encouragement for them to accept what was put in their bowl, and some days nothing was put in their bowl, you know. But how do you, you know, you can translate that into your own life, can't you? It's like, what is it like when, you know, I don't know, you really want somebody to praise you and reassure you and say you did a good job in a particular occasion, and nobody does. Your bowl's empty. Can you be okay with that? Or, you know, the food that's being served here, and, you know, you're really longing for, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, and it doesn't appear. And it doesn't appear the next day or the next day. Can you be okay with that? And even practicing with those little things, you know, that really adds up. And the fourth great contentment that he taught was, in a way, what we're doing, to be content, to be happy, to be satisfied, to be practicing. I think that's so interesting that he adds that one on the end of those three. It's like, wow, you know, so fortunate. And even if, you know, we're not, it's not completely okay where we are. It's like to actually appreciate, I mean, all the other things we could be up to, you know, perhaps wouldn't be quite so skillful. Here we are, you know, that's a wonderful thing, something to be happy about, to be really content with. However we might judge or evaluate that. So, something else I thought I wanted to mention is something to do with in our meditation practice, and maybe you begin to kind of see the there's this different kind of happiness or joy or contentment or something that comes from a sense of a reduction of activity, a kind of sense of doing less and less and less, that you're doing less. That you're not, that this sense of begin to kind of relax that sense of having to present an identity, you know, be someone, have an experience, or even in the meditation, you're trying to make something happen, and how lovely it feels to just be able to realize that the heart of practice, in a way, is this very, very, it's this more and more subtle sense of what it takes to be present. Like Paul often says, you know, what kind of effort does it make to connect, to listen right now? I don't know about you, but I'm often over-efforting. There's a sense of like, I'm listening, you know. Whereas actually, do you get that? It's like, that there's actually, so it's doing so much less. It's so much more about receptivity and coming out of our sort of more sort of fear-driven efforting, probably, or a image-driven efforting. And a teacher called Rodney Smith, another American, has written about this. And he says, practice takes us through the doing mind into the non-doing of ease and contentment. So it's not to say that we never have to do anything, because we have lives and we need to brush our teeth and, you know, even here. But I think maybe you get that. It's like there's something being pointed to here which is more about a sort of mental doing. You know, okay, I've got to, right, you know, it's like this. Rather than we're just walking, we're just sitting, just breathing, just washing up, something much quieter in that. Like, I remember our teacher, some of you know, Rob Bavea, sort of just really helping me to see at one point how happiness is much less busy than unhappiness. It's like unhappiness actually takes a lot of work. And that was something that took me a while, because I felt quite insulted by that. You know, but I know I'm too intelligent to be spending a lot of time doing all sorts of stuff that's actually making me unhappy. I want to be happy, you know. I'm not doing that, right? And then I started to look and see, oh my goodness, certain ways I'm thinking, using my attention, looping around. I said, yeah, actually, well, nobody else is doing this. So it's kind of like, And beginning to see that through how we place our attention, where we place our attention, we can actually start to starve the patterns of suffering. We can take their fuel away. You know, it's like we can stop fueling them with the energy of our life that flows into them through our attention and our grasping. We can to realize, we can stop doing that. So I'll read that, Rodney's again. So practice takes us through the doing mind into the non-doing of ease and contentment. So I don't know what else. I mean, maybe many things that could be said. It feels like it's, maybe I'm feeling contented, so I don't know if there's much more to say. I'm content with just saying that much. But it's maybe for each one of us to really have... also, a lot of this is how I see it anyway, that actually our contentment, if we can be contented, it's a great gift to the world. This isn't just for us. Does that make sense? How much of our wanting and getting and, you know, how much that... can be damaging to others in different ways, or to the environment. You know, that the simplicity of being able to, you know, be okay with a little, to be okay with, you know, not having to have others work so hard to make us feel all right. Not having to sort of feed conflict, because it builds our sense of, you know, I am someone. So many, and that when we have this sense of, yeah, enoughness, enough, I have enough, no, we can actually be be able to contribute to the peace of the world, perhaps. And to be able to participate out of our enoughness rather than from our need, from our sense of deficit and lack. It's like we can come from a different place. We can come from a sense of Yeah, yeah. It's more than enough. As one teacher has described it, abundant enoughness. Every this kind of fountaining and abundance that we can begin to perceive and feel, tune into. So maybe I'll finish with a very short poem by another American called David White. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here, this opening to the life we have refused again and again, until now. Until now. So let's just sit quietly for a moment. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath. If not this breath, this sitting here, this opening to the life we have refused again and again. Until now. Until now. Thank you.